May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Vito Dela Cruz. I'm an assistant federal public defender for the District of Nevada. I'd like to reserve about a minute for rebuttal, Your Honor. Your Honor, in this case, where I'd like to start actually is by arguing off of the red brief that the government filed.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
It looked to me when I studied the briefs as though the heart of the theory of ineffective assistance was defense counsel's failure to anticipate our holding in Yee. But Yee had not yet been decided when defense counsel was performing his duties. And I don't understand how it can be ineffective assistance to fail to realize that a case that's good for you is going to come down after your case is over.
I must be
missing something.
The answer to that question is that Taylor had been decided in 1990 by the Supreme Court of the United
sure,
States.
But Taylor doesn't answer your question on burglary of a car.
No, Your Honor, but Taylor did establish the categorical approach to determining whether a sentencing enhancement, should be applicable when the underlying conviction was a burglary. It defined under the categorical approach and permitted the use of a burglary for enhancement purposes if it met the generic definition of that term, which was the entry or remaining into a structure with the intent to commit a crime therein. In Taylor was preceded in this circuit by United States versus Sherbani, which was along the same lines. The reasoning of those cases continued thereafter. United States versus Parker happened after Taylor's pronouncement by the Supreme Court. And in 1994, the United States Sentencing Commission added burglary into the definition of enhancements. As we've indicated in the brief, the Congress and through the Commission is presumed to know what the Supreme Court precedents should be and is. And adding that definition into the sentencing guidelines, I think, led to a whole series of litigation with respect to the possible or potential use of prior burglary convictions for sentencing purposes. Now, in this case in particular, the pre-sentence report, there's an underlying problem. And that is that the pre-sentence report at the time that it was issued and submitted to the court, I believe it's paragraph 25 of the pre-sentence report, which is in the excerpts of record at page 269, I believe. Yes, sir, 269 of the excerpts. Paragraph 25 of the pre-sentence report neither contained any kind of citing a cite to a state statute or to a judgment of conviction, nor to any other noticeable facts with respect to the underlying conviction of attempted burglary. It was simply defined as attempted burglary. When sentencing was occurring, defense counsel did not contest the application of that underlying burglary as an enhancement, the 16-level enhancement at that under the immigration statute, guidelines of 2L1.2. He simply conceded its application, its definition as an aggravated felony, and thereafter simply moved for a downward departure on the basis that it wasn't a very, as I believe counsel stated on the record, that the underlying felony burglary conviction lacked pizzazz, as was indicated in the record.
The problem I'm having is there are too many steps. In order, you have to show that counsel fell below the minimally competent level, the minimal level of competency had demanded of counsel for constitutional
That's
purposes.
Correct.
That doesn't mean he has to be a good lawyer. He just has to be minimally effective at this. And he looks at this, and it's a burglary, breaking into a car. There's no case out there, no authority out there that says that doesn't fit the enhancement. You're saying he should have looked at the Supreme Court case that says you take the definition in the statute rather than looking at the specific facts of the case. And he should have anticipated that we'd figure out when we finally got the case that this kind of burglary won't do for the enhancement. And it just seems too remote to me.
Well, Your Honor, I think it isn't remote in this sense. With the authority that existed at the time, that is that for enhancement purposes, Taylor sets out the categorical approach. Reading this, especially reading this in light of the fact that there's no citation to either a certified judgment or a specific statute, I think reasonable counsel should have and was obligated to contest its application, since this was the only thing that was cited. This conviction in paragraph 25 was the only conviction cited to trigger a threefold increase in the base offense level in this case. Now, as Judge Reed at the district court level found, Yee was decided a mere 9 months after the sentencing was imposed in this case. Should have counsel...
A mere and the nine don't really affect me. It's the after that catches my attention.
I understand, Your Honor. But if this determination had been made, and this challenge had been made and ruled adversely to the defendant in this case, certainly an appeal is entirely reasonable. And that appeal would have been pending at the time that Yee was decided. This, I believe, all circuits have a requirement that in citing to briefs, there is a statement that we must disclose whether there are related issues or related cases to this matter at the time that the case is being submitted on the briefs or for argument. But even if that was not done here, the reasoning of Taylor, its progeny leading up to Yee, in every single case that has occurred from then has always adopted the definition and the approach, the categorical approach in determining the applicability of sentencing.
Counsel didn't have the advantage of Ninth Circuit law post-sentencing, did he?
I'm sorry?
Counsel did not have the advantage of reported case law post-sentencing. You're asking him to anticipate what the Ninth Circuit would do. That's a risky business.
No, Your Honor, and I do not say that he should have anticipated what Ninth Circuit case law should have been under Yee, but he certainly should have contested this burglary's application under Taylor. Taylor was settled law. Taylor was Supreme Court precedent at the time. It had been on the books for about 9 years. And the cases that have resulted from Taylor all indicate that for these sentencing enhancement purposes, this kind of challenge is there.
You're basically saying, why wasn't he as good as Yee's lawyer?
No, Your Honor, I think it's actually much more simple than that. Faced with, I don't know Yee's lawyer, and I don't profess to know how good a lawyer he or she may be, but certainly
to win on this burglary of a car issue.
At minimum, to ensure fairness and reliability in the sentencing process, Your Honor, I think that counsel should have contested this. At that time, the only thing that counsel contested this, the application of this attempted vehicular burglary as an enhancement, was to argue in 1999 that the 1995 guidelines applied. That's clearly not consistent with any circuit's law that I know of. That was the basis of his challenge. Before Judge Reed, trial counsel said, this is not an aggravated felony. This is not an aggravated felony because even though it's 1999, the 1995 guidelines apply. That is just simply beyond the pale of any level of reasonably effective counsel. With respect to prejudice, I have 1 minute left, but I would simply say a 40-month increase in the maximum potential sentence that the defendant received here establishes prejudice. Now, simply reserve another whatever time I have.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the Court. My name is Don Gifford. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney for the District of Nevada. And the first thing that I would point out, though, to the panel is that the attorney for Mr. Gonzalez-Garcia did make exception to that, and that can be found at the excerpts of record 292, number 20 of the court docket entry, and also the trial counsel's affidavit at the excerpts of record at 57. And it was noted in the judge's findings that the defendant objected to the classification of the felony as an aggravated felony, and that was denied. The holding of Yee is the applying Taylor to the Immigration and Naturalization Act was not commonplace. In fact, it's noted in Yee that it was the first time that had ever been applied. In fact, there were two subsequent cases that Yee looked at that also came from other circuits. I believe one may have come from the Seventh Circuit, and I believe one came from the Fifth Circuit. Both, of course, were decided after this individual was sentenced, of course. But Yee pointed out it was the first time that the burglary as defined at 1101A43G should include an analysis as done in Taylor. Now, Taylor was strictly, let's just look at the statute. As the subsequent case law developed, it talked about doing a modified categorical approach, where if the statute doesn't meet it, you have to look to other documents. And when you look to those other documents, you look to pleadings, you can look to transcripts of record, and subsequent case law has shown that you can look to a clear, unequivocated PSR. In this case, the court did adopt the PSR. In fact, as stated in the defendant's gray brief, it even points out that the court asked him whether or not the facts of that in the PSR are correct, and it was stated yes, it was not objected to as the facts in the brief. Secondly, the court puts in its own records that it adopts the facts and findings in the PSR. The things that happen with
the case that says that under Taylor you can look at what the pre-sentence report says.
Taylor, I'm sorry, sir. Are you asking which case says you can look at the PSR?
I'm asking what case holds that under the categorical approach in Taylor to determine what the prior crime was, the judge can look at the pre-sentence report in the present criminal case.
The case that I believe it may be discussed in Potter, and they cite to a case where, and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank, but I also did cite another case, Esparza Ponce, which is an F sub case. However, they do talk to which. That's cited in my brief that talks about that if you look to a clear PSR, that you can look to a PSR, and I believe that the language
it seems surprising to me, and the district court case that said that you could wouldn't really have much persuasive force. We can't just follow the district court case. So tell me, the circuit court case you say is Potter?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
And what does Potter say?
Potter dealt with, and what happened in Potter was Potter reiterated that you cannot look at a PSR, but it started looking at if there were other problems. In the Potter case, there was not a statute that was listed, and it said that without other information, you just can't look at a PSR by itself. However, there is a subsequent case that does say that Potter says that you can never look at a PSR, and if I can find that statute, or excuse me, find that case, is the Franklin case that I cited in my brief. Franklin says Potter does not teach us that a PSR can never be clear and convincing evidence for sentencing purposes. At the Potter case, that was also in 1990 case, that's where it came up, where the district court just relied on a PSR. There was no statute listed, but the sentence was affirmed in that case, though. I guess the stronger case would be Franklin rather than Potter when it talks about the PSR.
And how does this help you? The pre-sentence report says breaking into an automobile and taking a bag containing softball equipment. That doesn't look like burglary in a dwelling at the nighttime where violence is likely.
You're correct, You're correct, sir. What happened is when the Taylor case was decided, it was talking about the strict definition of what a burglary is and whether to enhance a sentence under the Career Criminal Act. Now, when they decided Taylor, when they decided Yee, that was under the Immigration and Naturalization Act. Taylor was very strictly confined in that Judge Fletcher said, Taylor, among other things, defines burglary to get the increase in the sentence. However, the increase in the sentence at 1101A43G, where burglary is defined, says theft or theft offenses or burglary. Now, Yee didn't discuss theft at all. And as counsel said, that, you know, 1101A43G adding burglary to the statute came out in 1994, subsequent to Taylor. I think that Congress was very much aware of the law, especially under Taylor, and they said, we don't want somebody that's an illegal alien who steals something, but because of that state jurisdiction calls it a burglary rather than a theft, then that he shouldn't get a bump. That's not fair. Anybody who commits a theft offense or a burglary offense, all under this one statute, gets a 16-level increase. In this case, what we have is that we have somebody who steals something out of a vehicle. The state of Nevada called it a burglary. And it's, what's interesting about the burglary statute is that it encompasses a couple things. Number one, a burglary of a dwelling, or breaking into a dwelling. It also encompasses the commission of an assault, which would be a violent offense, which would get the 16-level bump, and the third thing, which would be to commit a larceny. All three of those things would qualify as a 16-level bump, which this defendant got. And that's the burglary statute in Nevada is much different as discussed as the burglary statute as discussed in Yee. Yee was very narrow as to only burglary. The burglary statute in Nevada includes other stuff that would also get the 16-level bump. But 1101A43G, Yee did not ever discuss theft offenses. In this case, maybe a burglary burglary under common law may not always be a theft because you can break and enter and commit assault, and that would be a burglary. However, in this case, a theft offense can be a burglary, and that's what this defendant did. He broke into a vehicle. He took some stuff out, or softball equipment, I believe. He received his conviction. The state of Nevada, unfortunately, this calls it a burglary. Under Yee, it's like, okay, he doesn't get the 16-level bump. But are we going to say that that is not a theft offense?
The defense counsel, I gather, questioned the 16-level increase or enhancement, but he had reference to it. Which version of the guidelines was appropriate? What as of what date of the guidelines?
He asked the court to use the 1995 guidelines. Without the hindsight of actually being there, what I have in the record indicates that was just one of the things that he asked the court to do. I don't think that was the sole reason that he asked for the objection. As everything that's in the record that I have before me and that the court has before itself, I believe simply says that at the court docket entry that the defendant objects to the classification of the felony as an aggravated felony. Also, what's attached at the excerpt of record at 57, the trial counsel's affidavit that came from out of the 2255 that was attached in that hearing, in which he said that he objected on the basis of being considered an aggravated felony. My understanding is that, in my reading of the record, is that his objection was kind of a broad one. What he didn't do was that he didn't state Taylor. He didn't state Taylor. But what he did do was he did object to it. Says, Judge, among other things, number one, this is not really a aggravated felony that he shouldn't get a bump. This doesn't constitute what he thought of. He just didn't say the magic language of Taylor. But at the time, Taylor did not apply to 1326 cases. 1326 cases happened in 2000 with Yee, and with Yee said that was the first time they applied the using Taylor to the Immigration and Naturalization Act, and that's where 1101A43G burglary is found.
Do you know if the defendant is still in custody or whether he's been deported?
He is still in custody. I believe he is set to be released in September of 2004.
You're sure of that, though?
I have no other. All the information I have that he is still in custody, sir. Yes, sir. This is the earliest that he could be released is September 2004, is my understanding, sir, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, at page 194 of the excerpts of record, I asked Mr. Gamboa the question whether he had raised an objection to the 16-level enhancement. Answer, I don't think so. I asked him whether he had reviewed the sentencing memorandum. He said he had reviewed it. I asked him whether he had raised a challenge versus under Taylor versus United States. It's not that I recall. The only challenge that trial counsel made to the application of the enhancement was on the basis that the 1995 guidelines applied and not the 1998 versions, which were in effect at the time of the sentencing. Now, government counsel's statement that the Nevada statute for burglary is very broad, by definition, makes it inapplicable under Taylor for sentencing enhancement purposes. Their concession at page 11 of the red brief dictates that a remand in this case is necessary for that determination, even if the court does not issue the writ from here.
What page? What did you just say?
The red brief at page 11, Your Honor, the government's brief, the government states, the government agrees to the extent that the burglary statute as cited in the defendant's opening brief could not be a burglary, in quotes, as defined under the categorical approach of Taylor versus United States. That concession, Your Honor, is sufficient basis for this case to be remanded back to the district court. The attempted vehicular burglary that this person was convicted under, as the statute indicates, as the government counsel points out and we pointed out, is so broad and so general that under Taylor's categorical approach, it may not and cannot be used as an enhancement. At the time that Yee was decided under Rivers, this court was interpreting the statute as it existed at the time of its inception. And that is a holding from the Rivers case. And because of that holding, the definition in Yee and the holding in Yee must have applied at the time that Taylor was already decided. Taylor dictated it. And Taylor, in this case, dictates a remand.
Thank you, counsel. United States v. Gonzalez-Garcia is submitted. Next, we'll hear Meskey v. Plyler.